It's time for Comic Review Weekly, produced by Jackrabbit Studios in association with GravyBoy.com. Now here's your host, Andy Slott.
Hello there, comic book fans. Welcome to episode number 21 of Comic Review Weekly, the podcast where you get the good, the bad, and the ugly of comic books, hosted by me, Andy Slaughter. Comic Review Weekly is brought to you by the creative minds at Jack Rabbit Studios, home of Gravy Boy, the comic for folks who like a little hero and their heroes. Check it out at www.gravyboy.com. We've got a great show for you ahead here, but I need to note something first. Here at Comic Review Weekly, we usually try and mix it up a little here, with reviews on various books from different publishers. But today, we're going to do something different. As some of you may know, DC Comics is moving all of its superhero titles 1 year into the future after the end of the Infinite Crisis miniseries. This move is aptly titled 1 year Later, and is the starting point for several story arcs with new creative teams behind the wheel. To get a handle on some of this action, we're going to run through some of the major players all at once. We look quickly at three big characters affected by the 1 year later changes, namely Superman, Batman, and Aquaman. In Superman issue 650, no, you didn't miss 200 or more issues, DC canned the Adventures of Superman series and changed the plain Superman title back to its original numbering. Anyway, in Superman issue 650, the reader finds Clark Kent and Lois Lane happily enjoying some free time together 1 year after the end of Infinite Crisis. The two of them are enjoying a film about Superman at an amphitheater in Metropolis. According to the narrator of the film, Superman disappeared from Earth and hasn't been seen in a year. Whatever has happened to Superman, though, Clark is still here, and his marriage has never been better. With him not flying around the skies anymore, Lois and Clark get to experience a normal life. Clark's job is going better, too. We get the impression that he is a top reporter again, tackling the organized criminal organization Intergang and crusading against Lex Luthor. Clark is still fighting the good fight. And speaking of Lex, he's getting out of jail scot-free again thanks to his legal team. And with his newfound freedom, it seems that revenge on Metropolis is the first thing on his mind. Across town, a scientist is working on new ways to use kryptonite as a power source, and instead blows up his lab and turns into the Kryptonite Man. This new villain, actually an homage to a Silver Age villain, wreaks havoc in downtown Metropolis, and when Clark Kent would normally rip his shirt off and jump into action, he instead uses his watch to signal Supergirl. Within seconds, Kara Zor-El, Superman's cousin, flies into the scene. But this Supergirl is a more experienced, strategic warrior than we are familiar with, thanks to some coaching from Clark. But while Clark is admiring his pupil's skill, he is forced into an alley by a couple of goons to meet Lex Luthor hiding in the shadows. Clark's news stories are making Lex's return to public life very difficult. Clark pretty much gets his lip busted by Luthor's fist. That's right, apparently this 1 year later stuff has left Clark powerless. It's unclear yet how this has happened. This issue, part one of the Up, Up, and Away, is co-written by Jeff Johns and Kurt Busiek. They do a fantastic job of scripting this. Some fans will find it refreshing to see Clark and Lois enjoying their marriage for a change. It's also nice to see that even without Superman, life can go on. For a single issue to have so much these days, well, that's really not bad. The usually slow ramp-up of another six-parter is balanced out by the swift action of Supergirl versus the Kryptonite Man. Also, the artwork by penciler Pete Woods and colorist Brad Anderson dazzles. A very top-notch effort indeed. Superman number 650 gets 4 out of 5 stars. Okay, let's move over to Gotham City. 1 year later, in Detective Comics issue 817 and Batman issue 651, which are parts 1 and 2 of Face the Face. Apparently, Batman and Robin have both been missing for a year, and Jim Gordon is back out of retirement as the police commissioner. Lately, someone has been going around killing former villains of the Caped Crusader. First, it's the KG Beast, a villain that fans of the Jim Aparo era will recall. Then it's Magpie who gets killed, a villain who was involved in the first ever meeting of Batman and Superman. That's in the background. In the foreground is the return of Batman and Robin, called by Gordon on the bat signal. Poison Ivy is also back in Gotham, holding a group of CEOs captive at the top floors of a Gotham skyscraper. The dynamic duo hop into action after Ivy in Part 2 with a stunning split-screen action sequence. Batman and Robin are a team again, both strategically tackling the new threat. Artist Don Kramer provides some truly spectacular splash pages here, laying out the action with grace. The current artist for Detective Comics is Leonard Kirk, and he too is doing a fine job in this new story arc. Writing the one-year-later story is James Robinson. All I can say is that so far, I'm excited. Seeing Batman and Robin actually work as a team again is cool. How long this will last, who knows. But it's enough to say that the reader is left with plenty of good questions to maintain interest. Questions such as, who is killing the villains? Where have Batman and Robin been for the past year? And so on and so on. Okay, I'll be honest with you, I really don't have too much to say about it. The two issues so far are a thrilling intro to whatever direction DC is going with Batman post-Infinite Crisis. Detective Comics number 817 and Batman number 651 get 4 out of 5 stars. There is a single one-year-later title that has been generating considerable online buzz over the past few months, even more so than the Superman and Batman titles, and it's Aquaman, believe it or not. In issue number 40, the book is retitled Aquaman Sword of Atlantis, and it goes in a bold new direction courtesy of writer Kurt Busiek. The opening tells of a strong storm which tears an ocean-bordering laboratory apart. Its lone occupant is washed into the deep with the wreckage. Lucky for him, he can breathe water. While trying to get his bearings, this young man hears a voice in his head calling him, asking his name. He replies, Arthur Curry, which is Aquaman's real name, but this is not the one we know. The voice tells him to aid a character named King Shark, who is under attack by several mercenaries. With Arthur's help, King Shark defeats the attackers and both of them leave the scene, drawn to the strange voice. They eventually find the Dweller in the Depths, a shrouded figure with octopus tentacles on his head. Okay, it actually doesn't look as silly as I'm making it sound. Anyway, the Dweller of the Depths seems to be convinced that this Arthur Curry is the real Aquaman, that both he and King Shark have a special destiny to meet. But Arthur knows this is not true, and he lays out his past history, how he grew up in a lab after being born prematurely and needing to live in an entirely aquatic environment. His father was a scientist who gave him the ability to breathe underwater, and fans should know that this backstory bears many similarities with Aquaman's original Golden Age origin. Anyway, Arthur's story confuses the Dweller, who remembers and narrates to the reader the more well-known Aquaman origin, where Arthur Curry was originally born in Atlantis and exiled, where he grew up in the care of a lighthouse keeper. Okay, well, that's pretty much it as far as the issue goes. I don't really understand yet why Arthur, or King Shark for that matter, is still hanging out with the Dweller, or why he does anything that a freaky-looking squid man tells him to. But other than that, the Sword of Atlantis does a decent job of setting up a new character and providing the reader with some history. Judging by the overall style of the book, it looks like writer Kurt Busiek is going in more of a fantasy direction. The reader is left with more questions than answers. I personally can't say that I was wowed by it so far. The introduction of Arthur seems a little forced, to be honest. As I said earlier, he just follows the Dweller's instructions with little resistance. I thought that it moved a little too slow and that the artist, Butch Geese's pencils, were too murky for my tastes. However, it's certainly worth a shot if you enjoy fantasy titles set in otherworldly environments. I give Aquaman Sword of Atlantis 3 out of 5 stars. And that's going to about do us for this week. Thanks again for listening to Comic Review Weekly. You can email me your comments and suggestions to andy@gravyboy.com. I'd love to hear from you. I'm always open to broadening my horizons, checking out new stuff. And if you have anything in mind that you want to hear on the show, please let me know. By the way, the guys at Gravy Boy have a phone number you can leave a voicemail at for anything. If you enjoy the show and prefer to leave voicemail instead of email or whatever, you can call area code 309-409-0258. Join us next Monday for another new episode of Comic Review Weekly at www.gravyboy.com/CRW. I'm Andy Slaughter wishing you happy reading.